which is the Pasha Baichi, and then I'm carrying out the Mashkiach's wishes, Harad Rabowski Shlita, Bamein Rabbeinu, and then I will speak about it a little bit, because last week is the outside of Rabbi Shteyman, besides the Bracha, and he's not the only one who knows about Rabbi Shteyman. I also know a little bit about him too, and probably I've met him more than Rabbi Rabowski did on more occasions, so I'll get to that in a little bit. But I just want to first connect this whole, shall we say, issue, and connect it actually in a very simple kind of way. If you look in the Pesukim in Chumash, this is an excellent Chumash. I started to use it just the other day. It's the Oscroll Hebrew. It has a collection of every Mefarish. It's also a Nikud. And I am now using it really extensively. So now, if you have a Chumash, if you don't, I'll just have to read the Pesukim. Perek Memches was the end of Parshas Vayetzi. There are those who say that, but that's a separate discussion. I don't think. Okay, there's a separate discussion regarding that. I'm not having that one right now. The Torah says here, if you remember, Vayishlach Yisrael is Yimino, Vayashes Arosh Ephraim. I'm reading Perek Memches, Pesukim Yudalid, Tezvav, Tezayin, Yuzayin, Yuches, Yutes. When Yosef brings two of his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to be blessed by Yaakov. So what does Yaakov do? Sikel as Yadav. What does he do? Correct, he swaps his hands. He, of course, Menashe HaBechor. Vayom Yosef Elov Yivlochei Novi. He says to his father, no. Kize HaBechor. Menashe HaBechor. Sim Yivin Chalosho. The right hand should be placed on his head. Vayomer. So what does his father say? Yadati B'ni Yadati. Gam Hu Yivlochei Gam Hu Yivdol. He's also going to become a great nation. He'll also grow. V'ulam achiv ha-katon yigdal mimenu. The younger brother is going to be greater. V'zaru yiyem alo ha-goyim. What does it mean? Achiv ha-katon yigdal mimenu. So Rashi comments here on the spot. Who emerged from the loins of Ephraim? Yoshua. And Yoshua is going to, of course, be the one who will be responsible for kibush v'chiluk of Eretz Yisrael. And not only that, Rashi says, the Alamid Torah of Israel. After Moshe Rabbeinu, who taught Torah to call Yisrael? Yeshua ben Nun. Moshe kibbutz Torah from Sinai. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos and Masorah. Yeshua. Yeshua is Canaan. So after Moshe Rabbeinu, he's the successor of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's true that from Menashe will also emerge from his loins and Avim Galul. Namely, which Shofet emerged from the loins of Menashe?
Shimshon?
Gideon. But Gideon, as you know, was not the same Madrega as Yoshua that emerged from Ephraim. And that we know from Rashi, actually, in Bereshis, and Chazal, actually, I'm sorry?
Why are they only comparing them based on people that will, like, the one singular person that will come out of one of judge the, why doesn't Yaakov judge the, like, keeper, the shade of Ephraim?
In Pesukim, Yaakov talks about the descendants, how better people are going to come from.
Right, that's true. But Rashi Bereshis over here, he says that Kol Ha'olam Yismale Betzei Shomo Ushmo. If you remember, with reference to Yeshua, he was able to, at the beginning, he said to Yeshua, Rashi says here, Sheyamid Chama Begibam V'Yareh Ve'Emek Ayalov. Remember that? That he was, that's quite a miracle to, shall we say, halt the sun in its tracks, as it were. The question is, why was Ephraim Zochet to greater stature than that of Menashe? So there are several arguments, but I heard from my Rebbe, the Chatzai Nidracha.
Which one?
Avram HaKoyin Pam. I met my Rebbe at the age of 13. And then later on I heard the same result from Nisan Alpha Zatzal as well, another Rebbe of mine, that it could be because they are two different roles that are being, shall we say, portrayed by the Torah here. One role, the role of Yeshua, as you probably know, is essentially the spiritual leader of Klal Yisrael. And Menashe, Rashi quotes it earlier, Perek Mem Gimel here, Perek Mem Gimel Pasuk Yates. Rashi says, Zuha Ish Asher Ben Yosef. Namely, he is the one who essentially is the leader, the political leader. And he was the one, basically, who was the Melech, Menashe, and he handles the entire administration of Egypt under his father's auspices. And he's not involved in the study of Torah to the same extent as his brother Ephraim. So I heard from my Rabbeim that when you have a conflict between, shall we say, a melech and a talmid chacham, who takes precedence? I did not say that. I presented it, if you have one over the other, so clearly the talmid chacham is the one who, shall we say, takes precedence over a melech. And therefore Yaakov is the Chabad Ephraim because he's involved in the study of Torah. Me'asher Menashe, he's also in Malchus. It's true that what Joey said is not completely incorrect. The halacha is that a talmid chacham once has to listen to a melech. The melech actually has a certain authority, and a talmid chacham is obligated to listen to the melech and to stand up in front of the melech. However, the Gemara says in Ksubis, you probably know that Gemara. I assume you're familiar with it. The Gemara says Yehoshaphat, Melech Yehuda, my father used to call him Jumping Jehoshaphat. So Yehoshaphat, Melech Yehuda, when he would see a talmid chacham, so the Gemara says in Ksubis, shall I bring you a chair?
No, it's okay.
So, you sure?
Yeah.
Wow, some of your stature. Look at that, the tzaddik. So the Gemara says in Subis and not Kokimo. The Gemara says that Yehoshaphat, when he would see a talmid chacham, he would quickly rise from his seat, he would hug the talmid chacham, he would kiss the talmid chacham, he would call him Rebbe Rebbe, Mori Mori. And because Mitzad HaEmes, who's more chashuv than a melech? Unquestionably, the talmid chacham is more chashuv than a melech. I think that is sufficient. Thank you very much. I know it's true that when Joey said that from an external standpoint, a melech is more chashuv than a talmid chacham, but in reality, talmid chacham overrides the king. You see, you probably know the Mishnah in Hurrius. I actually mentioned this Mishnah the other day to someone, thank you. Daf Yud Gimel. The Mishnah has a list of, there's an issue which is called triage. You're probably familiar with that issue. It's a very well-known halachic, medical halachic issue, T-R-I-A-G-E. If you have three patients that come to the hospital at the same time, and you only have machinery for one of them, which one do you take care of? It's a big, you can imagine, a lot of discussion among the Dolei HaPoskim, what to do. Many, many tshuvas, including the Igros Meshev, Rabbi Shapanis and Datsal, and many others actually have truths about this topic. But here, the halacha is, for example, when it comes to a melech and a talmid chacham, let's say, are in captivity. They take them to captivity. What's the din? Who is going to be first in terms of hatzalah? So the Mishnah writes in Hurrius very clearly, melech is secondary to a talmid chacham. Why? Because the Gemara says over there, Masayim Hurrius, you are learning it, I don't know if you've gotten that far yet, Daf Gimel. The Gemara points out in Hurrius that talmid chacham shemeis ain lanu ki yel tzibo. You can't replace the talmid chacham. Melech shemeis, a king who dies, kol Yisrael ruyim lios melech. Any Jew can become a king. But a talmid chacham, it's hard to replace. A talmid chacham is irreplaceable. That's what we want to speak about a little bit. Mitzvah Hashem about Torah Shneimin, Shechatzad Libracha. So therefore, because of that, it would seem that when you take Ephraim and Menashe, that's why Yaakov Avinu decided to go and up, or if you will, give preferential treatment to Ephraim over Menashe, because Ephraim is more an Ish Torah, Menashe is more of an Ish Malchus, he's more of a political kind of leader, Ephraim is a spiritual kind of leader, and the Brisa says, we know that, for example, the Brisa writes in Pirkei Avos, everyone learns Pirkei Avos, that how many milas are there, shall we say, to Malchus? How many milas does Malchus require? I think it says Shloshim Malot, and what about Torah? 48 milas. It's even from Mishnah Pirkei Avos, that Torah trumps, my favorite verb, trumps actually the Malchus, and therefore the talmid chacham actually is something that you cannot be replaced. By the way, not only that, even though I'm from Ephraim also, you probably learned Tanakh, I assume you do. If you remember when Moshe Rabbeinu separates from Klal Yisrael, and towards the end of Zos HaBracha, so right over here, oh, I'm gracious. Anyway, that's not going to help me much. So towards the end of Zos HaBracha, we know what we're talking about anyway, so the pasuk says over there, Moshe Rabbeinu tells Yeshua, thank you very much, it tells him, Chazak Ve'ematz. Remember he tells Yeshua? Chazak Ve'ematz. Why? Ki ato, tovo esom azeh al oras asher nishba Hashem la'avosam, l'asei tzlehem. And that's a well-known pasuk. You remember that pasuk?
No, I don't. I think Roshi was the only one that knows about that in this room.
It's the Mordechai Shapiro song.
How's it go?
Yeah, I don't like to say much, but it's one of the songs that they say.
I heard that you lane beautifully.
I don't think so.
Yes. Oh, beautifully.
You're just being out of. I heard it from three or four different sources. Sure. They said they had a Valkyrie Mufla. Kach Shamati. Not just one person told me, three or four people told this to me. Because Rabbi Olshin asked me if I would come and perhaps lane. But there's a problem because because that Valkyrie that I know lanes in another school on Shabbos.
Another rabbi.
They're trying to hire the Rashiva to be a Valkyrie.
He said they were looking for a Valkyrie, that's what he told me. But Baruch Hashem, they found you. And you are a very redacted. You are very medakic. Anyway, so the Pasuk says, very good. So the Pasuk says that Ki Ato Tavo Esaram Azeh, that's what it says over there. El Haaretz Asher Nifra Hashem Lavosu V'Asei Slohem. And Rashi comments over there, Gam Ato Ki Echad Mehem, means that basically, that you, together with the Tikne Ador, are going to lead the people. However, there's another statement over there, if you remember. That's the Briscoe, you probably know the Briscoe. There's a second statement that Hashem told Yeshua, not just this first statement I just mentioned to you, but rather that he said the second time around, Chazak ve'ematz, ki ata tavi et b'nei Yisrael, el ha'aretz asher nishbati lahem. So Rashi comments that, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tu makel v'hachal kol kodam, take a stick and whack it over the head. So the Briscoe Rav asked, what's going on? What are these two parashiyos? And he said there are two roles that are being defined over here. One role is the Rosh Hashanah, and one role is the role of, shall we say, of a melech. It means one is the role of someone who's a spiritual kind of role, and one is more of a political kind of role. So that's what you see over here, again, in this parasha, and that's why I'm beginning by discussing Ephraim and Manasseh. They're two different roles. One role is that of Ephraim, which is a Torah digger role, and the other role is the role of, shall we say, Manasseh, which is more of a political role. And we see that Torah, as I say, trumps the idea of Malchus. It doesn't mean that you're not supposed to be Mechavi the Melech. You're Mechuit to Mechavi the Melech as well. You probably know the halacha. There's a we say in the Mishnah Brigadavas. I assume everyone here in your congregations or in your synagogues where you pray or where you daven. So I assume all of you say, I assume, the Tefillah Biad Shalom, shall we say, Biad Shalom Shal Malchus. Does everyone here say Tefillah for the American government?
My high school is English.
Okay, that's fine too. The fact of the matter is, the reason why we do so, because a melech essentially is a shliach Hashem. A melech is an agent, is an emissary. One second, Hashem is barak. Even the goyim also believe, actually, that a king is, shall we say, a kind of earthly messenger of the divine, some divine, shall we say, source. And even those who believe in the Zara also believe in such an idea. I'm just indicating to you that. That this idea of Tefillah, Biyat Shalom, shall we say, Biyat Shalom, whatever country you live in, is an obligation, is a chiyuv. That's what it says. Hashem Mispalo Mishalom Shem Alfas, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, it's also Gemara. Shem Moli Maror Shem Alfas, Yisrael Chayim Blo. Because otherwise people would eat each other up alive if they didn't have this sense of Maror Shem Alfas. So it's quite incredibly a chiyuv to Mechavi the king. Matter of fact, Mor Moshe Abedon himself, the Pasuk says, when came to Paru, V'yordu Kol Avadecha, Eile Eilai, Mishnachu Lidema, Mechan, Dikan Sheh, Chol can cover the Malchus. That's what Rashi quotes in Shmuel. So you probably know that, Rashi. Anyway, all this was being said by way of introduction to the topic that I want to talk about, namely that Torah in vis-a-vis Malchus is clearly more chashuv than Malchus, and therefore that's why Ephraim took, shall we say, precedence over Menashe. Okay, so I said I'm going to discuss a bit Hagon, Abaron Lev Shneim, it's a Hagon de Bracha who passed away a week ago. Now I'll begin by the following discussion. I, approximately 16 or 17 years ago, went to Rabbi Shneiman, the Hagon de Bracha, with a group of other rabbis. All the rabbis who accompanied me were basically Anglo-Saxon rabbis. And the intention was that we should open up between 5 and 10 vocational schools in Eretz Yisrael. That was my intent. And I had 4 or 5 other rabbis. I don't know if I should mention their names. I don't know if they want their names to be mentioned. I could easily do so. And I'm telling you a story that took place in Rabbi Shneiman's, in his house. And we went to him. We wanted to get approval to open up 4 or 5 vocational schools. We felt there were a lot of people who were not necessarily, shall we say, in a ideal position in terms of they were not really ready to sit and learn an entire day for, I don't know, 50 years. And there's an Itah Panasa. You probably know by now I'm very into Panasa. And I believe that everyone has to have Panasa. The way to get it is to, by getting yourself a good education, if you don't mind my saying so. Not that necessarily you have to go to Harvard. If you don't go to Harvard, it's not the end of the world. But there are other, shall we say, fine establishments that hopefully you'll attend.
Why you?
I'm not mentioning anyone right now, but anyway, there's a need to have a panasa. So he went to Rabbi Shteyman to see if we can get his approval to open up a vocational school. The people will learn in the morning, Limud HaKodesh, obviously Torah. And in the afternoon, they would get different types of skills, such as to become an electrician, to become a carpenter, things of that sort, which I think are very beautiful professions. What? I'm talking about exactly what I'm talking about. First high school, then post.
Oh, high school.
That's right. High school as well. That was my intention. Rabbi Shteyman was in total agreement with this position, which is very rare for people who come from a certain world to be in that, shall we say, kind of approval. And he was in complete agreement. That was very astounding. It was one of my first opportunities to meet Rabbi Shteyman. And so I just want to point out that he was a Gadol Yisrael who had an incredible trait that I value immensely. And you know what that trait is called? Normalcy. Now, of course, you'll ask, how do you define normalcy? Clearly, I have my own definition. You may have different definitions. But normalcy to me is someone who is able to stand firm against all the winds of change and is able to, he doesn't move to the right, doesn't move to the left. He has a strong, steadfast kind of position in different areas. He doesn't compromise. And he doesn't go to extremes. He has a certain moderate kind of approach. He recognizes the value of different strands of Kali. So I encourage many people, if you remember, those in my shir, to go this Shabbos to where you went, in order that you should be able to really witness the different, shall we say, the multicolored and multitude aspects of the Jewish people of Kali. So I am happy that you, Baruch Hashem, complied, and also with the Balkari Mufla, for that group. But you saw what you will not see, shall we say, this is a group of people who are astounding, according to my humble opinion. Astounding because they are the ones on the border, living literally close to the border of the state of Israel, and they are the ones who stand firm, and they are the ones who are, their love for, shall we say, Eretz Yisrael is absolutely mind-boggling. I should have 1 millionth of their love of Eretz Yisrael, and 1 millionth of their Mesiras Nefesh Eretz Yisrael, and 1 millionth of their passion. And 1 millionth of that. There also, you may have noticed, I imagine you did notice, I've been there a number of times. And also I went many years ago before the government and their silliness gave away Gush Katif. Not silliness, their stupidity. Gave away Gush Katif. And I saw the type of people who lived there. And I was really so taken by them, including one of them is a cousin of Elshin Shlita. And I have astounding people who lived there. Absolutely astounding in terms of their willingness to literally give up their lives if necessary, Chas V'Shalom, if necessary, in order that the Kol Yisrael should be able to live in Eretz Yisrael, to prosper in Eretz Yisrael, to flourish in Eretz Yisrael. They're really guarding the borders of Eretz Yisrael, there's no question about it. Okay, but putting that aside, so again, I just want to indicate that what he had, Rabbi Shteyman, was a lot of common sense. And you will say, okay, that's a big Kiddush, that someone has common sense. Trust me, it's a big Kiddush. I hate to tell you that. But a lot of people don't have common sense. I once heard my Rebbe, Soloveitchik Hatzal, he said in Yiddish, "In my Leben, I've been talking Asach Gedolim." I'll translate. In my day, I met some Gedol Yisrael, but they have no common sense. But they have no common sense. Wow, what a statement! You can be a Gedol Yisrael and have no common sense. Now, I think most Gedol, thank God, do have common sense, Baruch Hashem. But Rabbi Shteyman, he was zochet to live to the age of 104, which is amazing in and of itself. And if you look at his Piskei Halacha, he was a prolific writer, prolific author. I'll get to that in a little bit. And you see, actually, if you read that he has a Parashat LaTorah, if I'm not mistaken, they translate some of his things into English. Is that true? Or am I wrong?
Yes.
Besides the biography, Rabbi Lubavsky Shlita told me to read the biography, which I did. I was very, very taken by this biography of Rabbi Shteyman. I don't read a lot of biographies in English, I'll be honest with you, I'm sorry. Most of my reading is in the Hebrew language. I apologize to you. But that's what I do. What was that?
Good language.
Yes, it is. I believe the language that the Almighty speaks Anyway, he also speaks.
Ibris. Not Ibris.
The Rabbi, as you know, is a pure Ashkenazi Litvak. He's well known. He speaks only Habar Ashkenazis, very well known. And he lives, shall we say, where all the Litvaks live?
Lithuania.
No, not Lithuania. Teaneck, New Jersey. Anyway, my person is Teaneck, it's very clear. Anyway, he has nothing to do with Flatbush. He doesn't want any Keshe with Flatbush. No Shaisen today. No Shaisen today. Okay. Now you see why some people are, shall we say, have sex on other people? Okay. Yitzhak, so the Poskim always point out that when one is asked a question, the first thing you have to do is use your intellect. That's the most important thing. The Torah was given to wise people. If you can answer the question through your intellect, then you use the Torah, which is in some respects beyond intellect. But initially, you have to use it. Rabbi Shneur Zatzal was gifted with an incredible intellect. And this I saw myself. It's very interesting. I heard from him, this I heard myself, you probably, those of you who know me a little bit, some of you know me a little bit, that there are some people who travel great distances to get a bracha from a famous rab or something along those lines. And he suggested, Rabbi Shneiman, I heard the same suggestion also from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, both of these great tzaddikim, that they think it's a good idea to go to synagogue every day and listen to Rafi, where are you? And get a Birkat Kohanim and Jacob. Give me a Birkat Kohanim. Who else is here? I can't see right now. There's some other Kohanim.
Yosef,
of course. He's always very tzadua. Nechbal HaKelem over there at the tzaddik. Anyway, Bikitsa, so, but I'm not talking to get, I have to go upstairs, I guess, okay? But anyway, to get a bracha, he said there's no need to go run and
extra miles. So she could go upstairs after Ashkenazi meeting.
But will I still make the Birkat Kohanim there?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, probably. They haven't started yet. Okay, I got it. Anyway, so the idea is to get Birkat Kohanim. So he said, Rabbi Shneiman, you don't have to go and, shall we say, run great distances. You can get a bracha from Hashem's bracha on a daily basis. I was very taken by that.
If you're in America.
Then you daven with in Flatbush with the Sfardim, who are Makbid or Deal, New Jersey, or in Great Neck, or in LA. Where else? Any other places where they hang out, those guys? Where else do you guys hang out? Queens! There are Sfardim in Queens? Where? What area?
Any. His area.
With the Bukharian?
No, yeah, but I'm saying fresh meadows.
Also, fresh meadows. Wow, I didn't know that. Okay. Anyway, I'll just tell you now a few little vignettes from Rabbi Shneiman that I'm familiar with. There was once a fellow, Shiva student, and he got married, and he was not, unfortunately, zochet to have children for a number of years. So people often panic when they don't have children after a number of years of marriage. So then he went to Rabbi Shneiman, he asked him, the Gemara says, I'll say it both in Ibris and then in, shall we say, the other? Yes. Because otherwise, I'm afraid that if I don't say it in Ibris, the Almighty will not understand what I'm saying. Anyway, so there's a statement, you probably know the statement. Mishana Makom, Mishana Mazel. You ever heard that expression? When you change your
place,
so then you change your Mazal. Mishana Makom, Mishana Mazal. So he said, should I move? Yes, I'm staying there. I should move from where I'm living, because then this way maybe my mazal will change. I mean, it's true that Chazal tell us, for example, the Gemara says in Makkos, if a person doesn't have children and is living where in Chutz Aretz, what should they do? Move to Eretz Yisrael, and that's really called shinui makom from a very, very a massive kind of way. And then you'll be zochet to have children. How do I know that? From Pasuk Chumash, which happens to whom? Avraham Avinu. What does it say? As a shonim, Avraham Avinu be'eretz Kinaan. That's the lashon of the pasuk. That's the Gemara derives from that pasuk. That if you move to Eretz Yisrael, so that is there's a concept from Mishana Makom, Mishana Mazel. Anyway, he went to Rav Shneiman and asked this question. And Rav Shneiman told him that there's no reason to move. He said, "What? The apartment is guilty that you weren't zayich to have children." That's what Rav Shneiman said. No reason to move. And guess what? He was zayich to have children in that apartment. Of course, the bracha of tzaddik is no small matter. I'm not in any way poo-pooing the bracha of tzaddik. He's a great tzaddik. Tzaddik goes there. Rakadosh Baruch Hu Mekayeh. Translate.
And tzaddik decrees and Rakadosh
Baruch Hu fulfills. I don't know if you remember, now you all remember the three teenagers. Hashem Yikom Dama, Zecher Tzadik LeBracha. They were kidnapped in Israel, and so they were looking for them all over the place. How many years ago is that already?
4 years ago, I think.
About 4 years already. That's correct. Remember, we in the Yeshiva, we went to Menachem Avil, all three. So they were kidnapped, so the security people, the Mishtaba, the Army, the Shabak, and everything, the entire gang, they were all looking for them. And they were looking in the area of Hebron. So there was a Rav here who used what they called the Garal Hagra. You ever heard of the Garal Hagra? How shall I describe the Garal Hagra? The Garal Hagra is basically, it's a method of opening up the Tanakh. And the verse that you come to, so right away you take that, and then you open it up again, and the second time, and then finally it answers the question that you had. I mean, you have to be the Vilna Gaon, you know, to be able to, shall we say, utilize such a technique, or an Abavadah Zatzal, or something of that stature, in order to go ahead and do so. Anyway, so the king gets the Pasuk in Tanakh, and he was in Shoftim, in Perek Tezvav. I don't recall the Pasuk right now, to be honest with you. But that's what they did. They did the Garal Hagra. They came across the Pasuk somewhere in Shoftim, in Tanakh. And this Rav said that the Plishtim captured Shimshon. They bound his hands, if you remember, but he succeeded in untying the ropes. And he, Rav hinted that the teams would be released, similar to Shimshon.
Who was the Rav that did that?
I don't want to say who it was. That would be absolutely a problem with Shomara.
Why? It's a good thing. I found him.
No, wrong. He said that they were going to be released.
He said they
were going to
be released, they were killed.
Was it Rabbi Shraga?
They killed him almost immediately.
So what? Someone asked, as they called him, the Sar HaTeira, or Sar HaTorah, namely, Maran Afkhan Kaniyaski Shlita, Shashem Yarach Yarach. Someone asked him that, suggested also the girl had gone to answer these questions, to find out where these three teams are located. So he said, for this, you need Ruach HaKodesh. So they said to him, okay, so what should we do? He said, go to Rav Shteyman. This is what Rav Chaim Kanievsky said, they should go to Rav Shteyman, because he has Ruach HaKodesh. So they go to Rav Shteyman, and they say, okay, we heard you have Ruach HaKodesh. So he added, so Rav Shteyman said, well, if I have Ruach HaKodesh, why are there agunos in the world? Agunos are people who, women who we don't know where their husbands are. So clearly, I don't have to do HaKadosh. So what should we do? Do the Garal Hagra. That's what I'm saying to tell these people. Okay, but anyway, where did he receive his moderation, his sense of normalcy from? And the answer seems to me to be obvious, and of course you may not necessarily agree with me, because his parents were residents of what city? Where did he grow up? In Brisk. Brisk is the home of normalcy. And his parents actually were neighbors of the Briskerov, Rav Elbel Soloveitchik, otherwise known as the Griz. You heard of the Nishan Griz, maybe you heard that he's essentially an uncle of Rav Soloveitchik Tzatzal, Moreno Rabbeinu. And his father was a shamash of a shul, also the supervisor of the Arab of the city of Brisk. And the entire community carried on Shabbos. However, you probably know that the Briskas are very machmir regarding carrying on Shabbos. I think Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, Rav Chaim Briska, if I'm not mistaken, that the Dayan, Rasim Chazelig Riga, they didn't carry. Because the Mishabura says also, you probably know the Mishabura, those Arabs, he writes about Lev Mishachmir, that someone was very redactic, she machmir not to carry. The Briskas are very, very machmir not to carry, even when there isn't Arab, but that's not the general practice. And when Rav Soloveitchik visited Brisk in his youth, I'm talking about my Rebbe, Yossi Dov Halevi Soloveitchik Zatzal from Boston, when he visited Brisk in his youth actually, so he went to check the Arab on Arab Shabbos with this Dayan of Brisk, Rav Simcha Zeligriga. Rabbi Schechter reports this in his Sefer Nevi Sharat. You probably went through those Sefer, three volumes, very tonight. You probably could do the whole thing tonight. Anyway, so that's what I do generally when I get the Sefer. I try to read it entirely, from cover to cover. Someone just gave me a Sefer. And unfortunately for me, it took me 2 days to read it. So I wasn't able to sleep much. Because I had to go through the entire Sefer.
How quick do you get this Rosh Hashiva?
I took a speed reading course, which helps me a little bit. You learn to identify the main items, and then you are able to not read necessarily the entire thing. Whatever the case is, the Rav Shteyman clearly grew up in Brisk and was very, very influenced by Brisk. And there's a Sefer that actually I recently acquired, Alei B'Tamar, I actually read the whole Sefer, and it talks about all these, some of the aspects of risk that Rabbi Shneur actually was exposed to when he was young. So he was actually known as a child prodigy. How do you translate that into English?
It was an Eloy,
tremendous Eloy. I mean, he probably started learning, I don't know, at a very young age, and that's one of the pluses that these Dali still have over us. He started learning at a very, very young age, and he learned for many years with tremendous intensity. It was a masmid beyond belief. I remember a number of times when I went to visit Rav Shneur, went to see him, so he was learning. But I was able to get into him without difficulty at that time, at that point of time in my life. And the moment I finished talking to him, he went right back to the Sefer, because nothing happened. That's such masmid in these people. But what happened was, because of the war, he was forced to, he ran to Switzerland. He had to go to Switzerland, and there he learned in the yeshiva, and became actually, I think, a ram in one of the yeshivas in Switzerland. Anyone here been in Switzerland? Well, you have a mishpacha there, don't you?
I was not there.
That's not a good thing. Anyway, Switzerland is, maybe you've been to the airport in Switzerland. I was in Zurich once in my life. Actually, my wife and some members of my family this summer went to Switzerland to spend a few days there in the Alps, and also they were on all these, what do they call those? They have this that goes on, what's it called, the monorail over the Alps. I forgot what it's called exactly.
Ski lifts.
They want ski lifts. They had a great time. Wife had a glorious time. Well, she was saying Grenas Agamemnon most of the time. Pictures. We saw pictures actually afterwards. They asked me if I wanted to accompany that. I said no. I don't like yeshivas itself, but I don't have to. There's a yeshiva in Switzerland. There's shuls in Switzerland. There are big, some big donor actually even today living in Zurich in Switzerland. But so during the Second World War, he was taking Rav Shneur to a work camp, and he was forced to pave roads. And then he finally, at the end of it, he became he was able to make Aliyah, came to Eretz Yisrael, and became very close to the Chazon Ish. And he has also a lot of traditions he received from the Chazon Ish. So he really has two rabbeim, two main rabbeim, and they are the Briskov and the Chazon Ish. What do you say to that, Rabbi Yosef?
Great.
Yes, I wish I would have two such rabbeim. It wouldn't be a bad thing, all of us, to have two such rabbeim. And basically, he relied on these two pillars, the Briskov and the Chazon Ish, to a large extent. And you should know that, I'll just mention, probably, he was appointed by the Panimich Rav. I know many of you may have never heard of the Panimich Rav. There's a yeshiva called Panimich of Bnei Brak, one of the largest yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, about several thousand students there. Panimich. There are both Ashkenazi students and Chabad students. That's a yeshiva which is massive. It was built by the Panimich Rav, who was a dreamer and visionary beyond belief. He spent most of his life raising money for the yeshiva. He was all over the world. I met him when I was 5 or 6 years old, many, many years ago. I didn't really know, but my father, Avashal Tombi, and that's the fun of the Shiram, and my father was very into, like, should be introducing Dali as well. And he became a Rosh Yeshiva in Panovich of the Yeshiva Tana. You know what Yeshiva Tana means in Panovich? It means guys who are older than
high school.
High school age, exactly. But those high school people are, I don't know how to describe them. Iluyim, Lambunabu, Flogging. You cannot imagine people here start learning at a very, very young age. And even, I don't know if I told you the story, my brother-in-law, Zechanu Drach, had a brother-in-law who worked for Oscar. His name was Avichal Wiener. And he actually is a product of Boston, of Maimonides, 12 years. My Maimonides, there are two genders over there, you may be aware, not be aware. Then he went to university. And then subsequently, he landed in Lakewood, New Jersey, and began to write for Oscar. He wrote for Oscar for 35 years, mostly on Taros. He was a bookie in Taros. That Seder of Shas called Taros. He wrote on Kalim, 2 volumes. He wrote on Utsin, he wrote on Alois. He also wrote on Shalmin's very art school. And he was an outstanding Talmud Chacham. So, anyway, he asked me once, I've been out to sell close to 24 years. He has a lot of questions on Kalim. Can I bring these questions to some of the Gdoli Sell over here? So, I don't really know Gdoli Sell over here. But I agreed. I said, "Look, give me the name, tell me the address, and I'll go where I have to go." So I started going around. So I actually went to Rav Chaim Kanevsky, and on the spot he answered the question. Usually very short answers. I also went to Rav Nissim Karelitz, another nephew of the Chazon Ish. He's an older man today, man in his 90s.
He's
a Refuah Shleimah. Halavai Shemizavet Refuah Shleimah. I'm a Chaver of 40, 50 Svarim. I'm joking. I won the Gdoli Ador. And then after that, I didn't know too many people. So he gives me 2 or 3 people. I said, I can't go to all 10 people. It's too much for me. I'll take 2 or 3. So he sends me to a city. I'm not even going to have to mention the name of the city. And I never heard of this city. Nor did I ever hear of the person he sent me to. And it's a little nowhere. I had to travel all the way up north. I'm talking about north of Haifa. And I forgot the name of the city. I don't remember the name of the city. That's how bad it is. And I go and I ask, where's this person? They told me he's in some shack at the end of at the edge of the city. So, okay. I finally find this shack at the edge of the city. I walk into this place. It's like a little base, a little bit smedish. And there's an older man sitting there. And he's like, he looks completely disheveled. I said to myself, what in heaven's name is going on over here? And then I go to him and I present him with 20 questions, maybe it was 20 or 30 questions. I don't remember. I'm a second Caleb, one of the most difficult masechta of the Chas. He looks at me. He tells me in Hebrew, Kama zman yeshlacha? How much time do I have? I said, all the time in the world. Okay, very good. You have all the time in the world. You got to stay here. And I will write the answer to the questions. Or you can, Tistovev tells me, take a tour of the city, like a small little city. So I decided to walk around to see what's going on over there, which I did. And very interesting little place, like a Moshav type of city. Anyway, and I ended up actually going horseback riding. I saw they were offering it, so I said, why not? I want to tell you what happened. It was one of the precipices. Okay, that's a separate story. I'm not exactly a mumche in this matter. There was a guy who was leading me, so I thought he would continue to lead me. At one point, he doesn't let me go, and then the horse started going. Oh, boy. There was panic writ large that said it. But meanwhile, anyway, I came back after a few hours. He told me, he's still in the middle, okay? So I went and had myself some lunch. And after that, a little mosh batiri. And I came back toward the end of the day. He presented me with a 23-page contras, 23 pages that he wrote to answer my brother-in-law's questions on my seventh kevah. I was flabbergasted. These questions were not simple questions. I would have to spend 23 years to investigate these questions. And he, in a few hours, that's what David answered. So,
who was that?
I don't remember his name. Is that how terrible I am? I don't remember the name. So Rabbi Shneiman, anyway, guess who else I went to? Rabbi Shneiman, one of the people my brother-in-law sent me to. He was not as well-known then, although he was pretty well-known. And he also, on the spot, wrote all the answers to the questions in about 2 hours. He presented me with only about an 8 to 9 page kuntras. Questions in Kalto Pula. The Dali itself, just the mind-boggling. Anyway, he delivered shiurim in all areas. And he wrote so many svarim, in Shurim and Gemara, in Halachim, Shulchan Aruch, in Mishnah, in Musar, in Chumash, in Derech Hashem, in Ramchal, in Nebshach Chaim, in Ruach HaChaim, Chaim Aloshin. I mean, the man was just an absolutely mind-boggling person. But however, his entire Torah learning was built on, I never saw such humility in my entire life. Such anava, mind-boggling anava. I think he published over 30 svarim. I don't know, you told me, are they translated to English or not? I don't even know. Agel HaShachar. He's on the Lord of Shas, he has on the Torah, he's on the Gemara. So if it was, and basically after Abba Yashir passed away, he was considered to be the Gol Ador. The Gol Ador in many, many respects. He directed political parties, he directed the Haredi educational system, he was involved in stock organizations. He must have built, I don't know, Rabbi Oblaski tell you, he probably built 20, 30 yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. He was involved with vocational schools, he was all over the place. It's a mind-boggling, such a person who had such a hekev and such an ability to direct traffic in Klal Yisrael. And basically, there's no question he's involved in every single area of life. And the fact of the matter is, in terms of drafting yeshiva students, my understanding of his position is the following. This is my understanding, based on what I've read and what I've heard from others, that he felt that the chakilah people should learn Torah. However, if they're not learning Torah, they can be drafted. And they should be drafted. That's my understanding. That's why many people in certain worlds are not like him. Because he had this openness regarding the issue of, and he recognized the fact that Chayalei Tzal are defending our country. And if not for them, we won't be able to survive here. We won't be able to live here. And the fact of the matter is that he also counseled people. It came out of a certain area, family life, education. Many, many people went to him. And he indicated, for example, his anava was mind-boggling. And there's a statement of Chaim Elojan, and he held this also, that a person, let's say sometimes people don't agree to a shidduch, because they think they're more religious than the girl's family, or vice versa. Based on that, they don't want to go through the shidduch. And he says that people who are like that, if the people are good people, You know what they are? They're a bunch of arrogant people. They're just Bali Gaiva. Who can make a statement like that except for Rabbi Shneiman, who's one of the Gadol Yisrael? And there was even a shidduch with one point with a family that's apparently they went off the derech, which happens, as you know. Unfortunately, sometimes these things were not. The person came to Rabbi Shneiman and asked him, "What should he do?" Rabbi Shneiman said, "What's the problem? As long as the girl is a wonderful girl." So this guy quoted the Gemara about Basa. The Gemara says about Basa that a person wants to get married, what should you do? The Gemara says, "Look out after her brothers." Her brother said, "Lisa Isha, Yidog Ba'achel." We should check her brothers, because the Gemara says, "Rov Banim Domim Machiyai." Most children are similar to their mother's brothers. So Rav Shneiman said, you know, when that Gemara applies, people who live in a small village, and it's a very close environment. So then people go to pass. So then it's on account of their parents. But today, parents can provide a totally proper education for their children, and they can still go off the derech. Is that not true? It's true in every family, including my own family, unfortunately. And that's the way it is. That's what life is all about. So he told people who are about to marry that a happy marriage, this is Rabbi Shneiman's favorite line and Rabbi Roblowski's favorite line. You know what a happy marriage is all about? There's one word Rabbi Roblowski always uses. If you haven't caught it by now, wow, you miss Rabbi Roblowski. Translated to English or in Hebrew? Livater, livater, livater. What does that mean? Giving in, giving in, giving in. That was Rabbi Shneiman's favorite line. He felt Sichim Livater. And someone once actually, and he basically said the reason is because the root of all problems is egoism. People are just a bit arrogant, they're carried away with themselves. He had no sense of arrogance whatsoever. Pure anova. Pure humility in the full sense of the word. Someone asked him that the obligate to clean the chametz in the cracks between the tiles and the floor. So what did he answer? So he answered yes. And since it's such a chametzika matter, you should do it. Don't give it to your wife to do. And he, again, he instructed that people should obviously not get involved in politics. Anyone ever saw a picture of his home? Wow. I don't know how anyone could live in such a home. What?
It's a palace.
A palace, yeah. He's being very, shall we say, Lashon Saginara, it's called.
House of Tyrant.
Rabbi Shimon, he once said, he wants someone, I don't remember the exact story, but he once quoted his home as being a palace.
He himself saw his home as a palace. He basically lived in a one-room home. I don't think there's any luxury whatsoever in that house. I don't think there was a piece of furniture that probably was not broken. And it's amazing that one of the problems there is to sell that people sometimes want to register their children to a certain school, they can't get into that school because of certain different matters. I don't know if you're aware of this issue. Sometimes people here don't like Sfardim. Exactly why not, I don't understand. And sometimes people don't like Ashkenazim. Exactly why, I don't understand. And they let him into schools, and he felt it was all pure arrogance. And he used to scream all the time, "Gaiva, Gaiva!" That's all they're doing, a bunch of arrogant people. And he got them into all the schools, and he was very, very influential in terms of not discriminating, etc., etc. And he said that when he learned the Brisk, with the sons of the Brisk Rav, you know who else learned in that, shall we say, that cheder with the sons of the Brisk Rav? All kinds of julikas. You know what julikas are? People who are character, Shein Kavo, who went off to Derech, they all learned together. Because at the end of the day, he's Kali Yisrael. So he had such a sense of anova, of humility, of what Kali Yisrael is all about. And he was, you can imagine, he battled with just being arrogant his whole life. Now, there are many people, they disparaged him, no question about it. He didn't hear any, literally, you could insult him and disparage him and belittle him. He was not affected to who's ever anything. He didn't respond to those people. It's an amazing subject quality. The Gemara speaks about and they love and they're older. Shomu chaprosu v'enim mashivim. Also me'av osmech on the Yisurim. Aleim ha'kosim omer v'or v'kitzitz Hashem v'gurasi. You know the Gemara. I'm quoting on the Shuma. You probably do the Gemara. What about many poskim? A person who's able to be disgraced and does not disgrace others. People shame him. He doesn't respond to them. That's a tremendous, tremendous madrega. There were people who served in certain Haridus in Sahal. He did not oppose the people who did so. And then the extremists went ahead and they wrote on a wall and they said, Shneiman equals Cook. They don't like Rav Cook also too much. Then it's out of the wrong. So they wrote down Shneiman equals Cook. They compared him to Maran Rav Cook. So Rabbi Yashin once walked past that graffiti where it says Shteimen equals cook. They compared our Shteimen to our cook. So Rabbi Yashin said, wow, what a compliment. They gave Rabbi Shteimen. He says, Rabbi Shteimen is a great gadol, but he doesn't think he's on the same level as Rabbi Cook. This is what Rabbi Yashin said. Rabbi Yashin, by the way, you know who his Masada Kedusha was? Rabbi Cook's Hatzah. He was Masada Kedusha by Rabbi Yashin. But these Gadol Yisrael knew exactly who's who. And Rabbi Shteimen was once told that people, I saw this biography of Rabbi Shteimen, they said he was told that people were distributing flyers against him. They were speaking against him. So he said, ah, if I knew who was doing this, I'd have to pay that person. Because at my age, I now really have to engage in taniyos, I have to start fasting and doing all kinds of tzidkus, all kinds of righteous things, given where I am, not far away from, shall we say, the kever. And now that these people basically are, shall we say, they're helping me atone for all my averas. So therefore, I should pay them, I should pursue them, I should continue to do so. That's where he was coming from. That's the mind-boggling and his normalcy and his humility and his simplicity. And I don't know if you saw, he left the Tzavah. He left a, what do they call it, last will of testament? Even before the Tzavah. At his wedding, he said that only 15 people should come. Because why should people waste their money on him? And when he died, he said he hopes that they'll have a minion at his Leviah. You know how many people came to his Leviah?
We did.
We never made it.
It was considered, Rav Avassi said it was considered like we were there.
There's no question about it. He lived in an apartment that was renovated. His chairs were made, I saw his chairs were made from orange crates. I myself saw it. They were orange crates. Those were his chairs. You didn't have a place to rest your back. And really, it seems to me, as you know, I'll just end with this, I didn't realize the time it is, but the wealthy person of Mezachav Tzayim. And he was standing by the lack of furniture in the Chofetz Chaim's house. What's going on over here? Of course, the Chofetz Chaim answered him that this world is only of a temporary nature. Haskin Atzcha Beprozdor, Shikanis the Tzvakle. Prepare yourself in this world to get to the real palace, of course, in Elam Haba. Lasalabo, therefore, I don't need much furniture in this world. That's how Rabbi Shteimen lived his life. He was the model of Tznius. Of anava, of simplicity, of asmada, of tzidkis, of yashamayim, of such normalcy. I don't think I ever met such a normal gadol my entire life. I've met a number of normal gadol yourself. I only hang out with those. I try to avoid the others. But that is what we have to strive for, to be able to live with all kinds of Jews. And you should know he was, everyone had access to him. Another one of his greatness, really. Every single Jew had access to him. He didn't discriminate between this kippah, and that kippah. You weren't the function of your kippah, which of course such silliness and stupidity, as you know. Baruch Hashem, you're all wonderful people coming from different walks of life, and different, shall we say, hashkafos, and Hashem should give you all a bracha. Later, become an admor, the Yochasidic. So, I'll take your chasidic kalabay necha. Hashem let the bracha behead you, the light in your eyes, the Gemara brachas. Hashem should give you a bracha that all of us should be zochet to sort of take from this model, this outstanding model of a human being, and try in our lives to be normal, to show chesed to all of Yisrael, to be able to interact with all kinds of people, irrespective of where they are, religiously, any other way in life, to connect with them, to really demonstrate them, to be models for walking Kiddush Hashem. That's what all of us should be. All of us are capable of doing that. And Allah Hashem should give them the Sefer Shemaya to reach those levels.